The following content is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Out in the Garden. For the next half hour, enjoy articles to help you improve your green thumb. And now, here's NCRS volunteer Cindy Fowler.
We'll start with the 1001 hints and tips for your garden, with things to do in May. For trees and shrubs, prune suckers that sprout from the base of newly planted Japanese magnolias and other trees. Apply granular fertilizer to crepe myrtles and other blooming shrubs to encourage extra flowers. And spray with insecticidal soap as needed to control whiteflies and black sooty mold. For annuals, as winter plantings are replaced, add organic matter, lime, and fertilizer as needed. Direct seed annuals that require warm soil, such as zinnias. Weed, water, and fertilize as needed. Watch for signs of pests and diseases. Cut flowers early in the morning for longer-lasting arrangements. And apply summer mulch to beds. For perennials and bulbs, apply summer mulch to conserve soil moisture as hot weather arrives. Weed, water, and fertilize as needed. Deadhead or cut back perennials after flowering to promote plant vigor and rebloom. Deadhead spent bulb plant blooms to prevent seed formation. Watch for signs of pests and disease. For your roses, apply granular complete fertilizer to encourage extra flowers. Watch for mildew, rust, and aphids and spray as needed. Water weekly and deeply in dry weather, applying 1 inch of water. Spread organic mulch, such as shredded bark or pine straw. Continue spraying for black spot and powdery mildew. Above 85 degrees Fahrenheit, dilute fungicidal sprays by 1/3 to avoid burning the foliage. For vegetables and herbs, now is the last chance to plant hot weather vegetables like okra, black-eyed peas, and sweet potatoes. Plant hot weather herbs like basil and rosemary. Watch for spider mites, squash vine borers, and stink bugs. Water thoroughly using a low-volume irrigation system. Soak soil 8 to 12 inches deep. And do not water again until plants show slight signs of wilting. For tomatoes, watch for spider mites and blossom end rot. Pick off any leaf-footed stink bugs or apply a recommended insecticide. Fool birds with red Christmas tree balls. One peck at the decoys and they'll leave the real tomatoes alone for a while. Harvest fruit as soon as it turns pink and ripen it fully indoors. For lawns, fertilize lightly if lawn has lost some color and isn't growing well. Dethatch Bermuda grass lawns. Start Bermuda grass lawns from seed if night temperatures are above 65 degrees. Watch for fungus diseases such as anthracnose, brown patch, dollar spot, helminthosporin, necrotic ring spot, and red thread. Watch for insect damage and apply post-emergent herbicides to control weeds in Bermuda grass. For patio and container plants, monitor plants daily for water needs and pest control. Fill in gaps with tropical plants that have colorful foliage for a low-maintenance summer replacement. Pinch back scraggly growth and deadhead as needed. And as the weather warms, watch for signs of insects and diseases, discarding diseased plants and removing insects by hand if possible. Use insecticides only as a last resort. From the Garden Smart e-newsletter, Growing Zucchini and Squash by Jolene Hansen. Zucchini and other squash are some of the gardening's easiest to grow and most prolific veggies. Growing a bumper crop of zucchinis or other types of summer and winter squash is not only simple, but you'll also have plenty of extra squash to share. Zucchini and other squash do not require much work in advance. They don't tolerate cold soil, cold air, or frost, and the roots don't like to be transplanted. This adds up to your favor. You can plant squash seeds late in spring after the soil warms and sow your seeds directly into garden soil with full sun. There's no need to start seeds early indoors or buy pre-started plants. Wait to plant squash seeds until at least 2 weeks after the expected frost date in your area. If you're unsure of that date, your local county extension agent can help. Once it's planting time, you may want to make several succession planting. By planting seeds every 2 to 3 weeks until midsummer, you can keep your squash harvest flowing until the winter frost. When you grow squash or other plants from seed, you are not limited to the varieties your local garden store carries. This opens up a world of squash to enjoy. Choose from heirloom types passed down through generations, such as the dense, nutty Italian zucchini, Costata Romanesco, or try sweetly scalloped, sunburst yellow patty pan squash instead. Maybe you want the latest disease and pest-resistant variety. When you grow from seeds, you can pick and choose. Squash are either summer or winter types, depending on when they're ready. Soft-skinned summer squash, such as zucchini, mature quick. They're often ready within 2 months from when you seed. Winter squash, such as acorn or butternut, take at least 3 months or longer to ripen and develop a thick skin. But tough skins means they'll keep longer, too. Seed packets will include this information. Like cucumbers, squash varieties are either bush types or rambling vines. If your garden is short on space, bush types are a great choice. If you're set on a vining squash, go vertical and grow your squash on a trellis. Anchor the vines with soft twine as they grow and give extra support as needed. Many types of summer and winter squash grow well in large containers, even on urban balconies or patios. Squash are heavy feeders that benefit from lots of organic matter in the soil and fertilizers designed especially for garden vegetables. A plant food with added calcium feeds your squash and helps protect against a disease called blossom end rot. Feed your squash plants when they first start to bloom and again when fruits appear. Watering squash is very important, especially when tiny squash form. Make sure they get at least 1 inch of water per week from rainfall or from you. Water early in the morning. Avoid overhead watering. Keep leaves as dry as possible to help prevent garden fungi diseases. If common diseases such as powdery and downy mildew strike, treat with an effective, time-proven fungicide. Watch plants for signs of insect pests, including eggs on the undersides of squash leaves. Squash pests often hit hardest in spring, so first plantings are the most vulnerable. By checking regularly, you can stop pests such as squash bugs and cucumber beetles before they dig in. Squash have long tap roots, but the rest of their roots are shallow. A 3 to 4 inch layer of organic mulch, such as compost, helps retain soil moisture, protect shallow roots, and keeps dirt and water from splashing up. It also cuts down on weeds, which compete with squash for water and nutrients, so that means less weeding for you, too. Squash rely on insects to pollinate the flowers that produce your harvest. Without good pollination, fruits end up small, withered, or misshapen. You can help lend nature a hand and pollinate squash blossoms yourself. Hand pollination ensures the job's well done, and it's great fun for kids and adults. Don't be surprised to find little squash bees napping inside blooms. Squash have separate male and female flowers, easy to tell apart. Males have long, slender stems. Females have thick stems with a bulge below the petals. That bulge becomes your squash. Cut the male flower with its stem and gently remove the petals. Leave the pollen-covered center intact. Use the stem with the pollen just like an artist's paintbrush to paint the female flower's center thoroughly with pollen. Once done, you've become a pollinator. You can start enjoying your squash crop before its fruits ever appear. Chefs like squash blossoms for their color and mild squash-like flavor and use them in many ways. Harvest blossoms and leave a short stem so the flower stays whole. Target male flowers, not fruit-producing females. You can saute, stuff, or fry squash blossoms, or chop them up and use them in soups, salads, and pastas. Harvest and eat summer squash at any stage, even as baby squash with the flowers attached. Harvest regularly and do not let them get too big. They're tastiest when young and tender. Fresh summer squash keeps 1 to 2 weeks in the fridge. Harvest winter squash in the fall when their colors deepen and their skins get hard. Store them in a cool, dark place and they can last through several winter months. With zucchini and other squash on your gardening to-do list, you can plan on plenty of squash for your table and for neighbors to enjoy, too. Now from HGTV's Weekend Gardener e-newsletter, Flowers and Plants Rabbits Hate by Lynn Coulter. Stop rabbits from munching on your garden with these pretty, bunny-resistant flower and plant picks. Sweet alyssum. Lobularia maritima bears clusters of tiny white, lavender, violet, or pink flowers in spring. Grow it in full sun to part shade, in almost any type of soil. It's both heat-tolerant and drought-resistant. If you're planting seeds, sow them on the surface of the soil after all chance of frost has passed. The plants form a dense carpet of flowers, and the blooms continue year-round in warm climates. Try the plants in borders, rock gardens, and mixed beds. Ageratum, also called floss flower, Ageratum is one of the few annuals that bloom in light shade, although it prefers at least 6 hours of sun each day. While some varieties are pink or white, blue is the most common color. Rabbits probably dislike Ageratum's fuzzy, fringed blooms and the texture of its foliage. Lantana. Sun-loving lantana bears flower clusters that look like brightly colored confetti. Some gardeners say rabbits love to dine on their lantana, but others report that they avoid the plants because of the leaves' pungent aroma. The foliage and ripe berries are also known to contain a toxin that can affect many animals. Birds, butterflies, and hummingbirds, on the other hand, love the tubular flowers. Cleome. Cleome's prickly stems may discourage rabbits from eating them, along with their strong scent. Some gardeners say the plants smell pleasantly minty, while others complain of a skunk-like or catty odor. Native to the southern United States and South America, cleomes bear large flower clusters from midsummer until frost. And pot marigold, also known as pot or English marigolds, calendulas are related to French and African marigolds. The big orange and yellow blooms resemble daisies or chrysanthemums. Rabbits may dislike the plant's strong, fragrant, and bitter taste, although the flowers and leaves are edible. Geraniums. Geraniums are thought to deter rabbits with their pungent smell, although gardeners enjoy varieties with a citrus, rose, or other appealing fragrance. Snapdragon. While children and adults love playing with snapdragon blooms to make the little flowers snap open, rabbits find the plants unpalatable. In fact, many say that portions of anthurhinum are toxic to pet rabbits and should not be grown around them. Snapdragon varieties range from dwarf types to giants that grow 3 to 4 feet tall. So there's a size for every sunny garden space. Shirley poppy. Colorful Shirley poppies are not eaten by most rabbits, probably because of their aroma and milky sap. You may see these drought-tolerant annuals referred to as corn poppies, Flanders poppies, or field poppies. They thrive in cool weather, but succumb to heat and humidity. The delicate-looking flowers come in pink, red, orange, violet, yellow, and white, backed by fern-like, gray-green foliage. Salvia. Attractive to hummingbirds and butterflies, salvia is not usually eaten by deer or rabbits, probably because of its scent. Depending on the variety, salvia blooms may be cream, orange, lavender, pink, red, purple, or blue on plants with green, gray-green, or silvery-green leaves. Milkweed. Though butterflies flock to milkweed, monarchs in particular, which are said to feed exclusively on the perennial, the milky sap that gives the plant its name is poisonous to rabbits as well as dogs and other animals. The plants grow to 3 feet tall and bloom throughout the summer in shades of cream, pink, red, yellow, and even bicolored varieties. Tomatoes. Sun and heat-loving tomato plants typically deter rabbits with their strong fragrance. Peppers. Peppers are another vegetable that rabbits tend to avoid, likely because of their spicy scent. Globe thistle. Globe thistle has woolly gray stems and impressive, spiny, hairy, gray-green leaves that rabbits avoid. Though not a true thistle, spherical, blue, thistle-like flowers appear in summer. And catmint. Catmint, known as the catnip plant, starts blooming lavender blue late in spring, and the foliage smells heavenly when you brush past it. Rabbits, however, dislike the plant's strong fragrance, and the cats the catnip plant attracts. Now from 1001 Hints and Tips for Your Garden by Reader's Digest, how to avoid pesticide use. Start with healthy plants adapted to your site and encourage diversity in the garden. Practice good housekeeping by deadheading spent flowers and clearing away debris, thus denying pests a place to hide and nest. Monitor the garden constantly for evidence of pest damage so you can stop a problem before it becomes an infestation. And use mechanical controls, such as barriers, traps, hand picking, and floating row covers. And finally, enlist such allies as chickens, frogs, birds, ducks, lizards, spiders, ladybugs, and bats, all predators that feast on garden pests. Now, is your soil well drained? Perform the following test to see if your soil has proper drainage. Dig a hole 1 foot wide and 1 foot deep at the lowest point in your garden. Use a garden hose to fill the hole with water. Then observe the results. If the hole empties quickly, the soil is too light to hold moisture and nutrients. If the hole still contains water after 24 hours, the soil is too heavy to drain well. If the water drains away in 30 minutes to an hour, all is well. Your soil is adequately drained. And a broccoli sampler, Broccoli Rob from Italy, has succulent leaves and button-sized florets. The flowering Galon, also called Oriental broccoli, has leaves and buds with a sweet broccoli flavor. From the Raleigh News and Observer's Home and Garden section, solve your dry slope problem. A friend mentioned to me the need for plants to stop erosion on a steep bank on the lot where a new house will go up this year. This is a problem many people face, but it is also one that can be solved with proper plant selection. Grass is probably the most difficult plant to grow and take care of on a slope, which is why people look to evergreen perennials or low shrubs. Not only is a slope hard to mow, it also tends to stay on the dry side. That is because rainfall rolls down the slope instead of sinking into the ground as it does on flatter ground. Those wishing for a quick and reasonably cheap solution often turn to clumping monkey grass, also called lily turf, but not the creeping one called Liriope spicata that spreads beyond its designated space rapidly. This is evergreen, grows in shade, and tolerates the dry soil of a slope. However, a better choice is the shorter mondo grass, which tends to be about 6 inches tall and will form a grass-like ground cover. It is also drought-tolerant and a good choice to combat erosion. However, you can look beyond these grassy plants to certain evergreen junipers that are ideal for banks in a sunny spot. These ground-cover junipers have needle-like leaves arranged densely and tolerate heat and drought. The lowest are called creeping junipers, and some of them rise just 4 to 6 inches tall, such as blue rug. Creeping junipers tend to grow 12 inches tall or lower, depending on the variety. Junipers require sun, but several perennials that serve admirably as ground covers on slopes tolerate shade. These include Lenten roses, spaced 1.5 feet apart in a zigzag and mulched to hold down weeds. They tend to be 12 inches or so tall and bear flowers for several months, starting in late winter. Some maintenance is required by trimming spent flowers and old foliage annually, but that is not an onerous job. Ajugas are another ground cover, and there are many choices in color of the foliage, such as the descriptive chocolate chip, burgundy glow, and others. They are distinctive with their pretty foliage and spring flowers in shade or part shade. Any of these choices can turn your bank from a problem to a place you will like. Our next article is also by Nancy Brakey. Saucer magnolia, a joy to behold. Blooms really popped out in the past few days, brightening the scene with lovely spring colors that stand out against the late winter landscape. I think one of the best of these early bloomers is the saucer magnolia, a medium-sized tree that unfolded its blooms almost overnight. This is such a joy to see, not forgetting the bridal wreath spireas, forsythias, star magnolias, daffodils, redbuds, and camellias that also make this a beautiful time of year. And the saucer magnolia brings not only beautiful flowers, but a lovely tree that is well-suited for smaller properties, typically growing at a moderate pace over time to 15 to 25 feet tall and wide. It typically has several trunks, which make it seem like a large shrub for many years, until it matures into a taller plant that is clearly a tree. It is, of course, a relative of the evergreen southern magnolia, famed for its beautiful white blooms in late spring, and one of the symbols of gardening in the South. Another relative is the pretty star magnolia, a shrub or small tree with frilly petals on its early blooms. The plant prospers in acidic soil enhanced with organic matter, such as compost, and it will grow in part shade to full sun. As with most trees and shrubs, it prefers well-drained soil with even moisture through the year. It is deciduous, meaning the leaves drop in autumn, but the silhouette left behind is striking because of the branching habit that begins low on the trunks, spreading horizontally in a graceful manner. The flowers, depending on the variety, may be pink, white, purple, or burgundy, but most of what we see are all pink or pink and white. Their shape leads some people to name it tulip magnolia. Though remarkably carefree, the early blooms of saucer magnolias may be harmed by a sudden deep freeze in early March. That has happened a few times to my saucer, a variety named Alexandrina, which has been growing for more than 35 years. There is, of course, no way to cover a big plant as you would a hydrangea facing a deep freeze in April, but it is a risk worth taking.
That's all the time we have for today. You've been listening to Out in the Garden on the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Out in the Garden is available as a podcast by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.